Hi everyone, Camille here. It's 1 p.m. in Philadelphia, 7 p.m. in Paris, and 1 a.m. in Lhasa. We're live, you're listening to Cosmic, exploring the world of change via the arts. Thank you for tuning in. Yeah, we keep exploring the art space in season 3 of the show, talking to the movers and shakers of the subtle realm, with the mission to decipher what the arts are offering to modern society today, what works, what doesn't, and how the artistic practice affects change at the personal level, at the collective level. Today, taking a deeper look at how to build community from music. Music as a social service, and how a certain type of music education can fundamentally transform children and set them on the right path to success. Even when growing up in difficult environments, violent and traumatic sometimes, music as a social service, a formula that works and keeps on being innovated. Last week, I had the privilege to talk to Stanford Thompson. He's a remarkable musician, educator, social entrepreneur. He runs an organization called Play On Philly in Philadelphia. And over the last 10 years, he implemented programs inspired from El Sistema. El Sistema is a music education program founded in Venezuela in 1975. We're going to learn how it works, talk about the value of relationships, and take a look at the coming 10 years and what needs to happen at the institutional level in that sector, at the community level, and in the field of the arts. As usual, I have a selection of cosmic music and sounds to transport us. Stanford Thompson plays trumpet, so I jumped on the occasion to give this instrument some love in today's playlist. You know it, it's time to adjust your headphones, breathing in, breathing out. Let's go! Chapter 1, Theory of Change in Practice. So, what's the story? Well, for Stanford, it all started when Dr. José Antonio Abreu, the founder of El Sistema, got the TED Prize. El Sistema is a publicly financed music education program, as I said, founded in Venezuela in 1975.
And with that award, he gave a very beautiful speech on how powerful classical music, specifically classical music, is a great tool for social transformation. And introducing all of the work, hundreds of thousands of kids in Venezuela, all of the professional administrators, all of the professional musicians, how they really built an ecosystem of support through music for some of the most vulnerable kids throughout the country of Venezuela.
Soon after, Dr. Abreu teamed up with the New England Conservatory to launch a 5-year fellowship a 5-year fellowship program, basically.
Every year for 5 years, 10 musicians would be trained in nonprofit administration, be able to go down to Venezuela and visit for a couple of months and receive all type of support, and going back to whatever city the fellows wanted to create El Sistema inspired programs.
And of course, Stanford was one of them.
So I landed back in Philadelphia in 2010, started building, you know, from my networks, from the Curtis Institute of Music, and very quickly put together the human and the financial resources to launch Play On Philly with approximately 90 kids, and bring them together every day after school for music making. Students are loaned an instrument and they attend our program tuition free. What the kid and the family agree and commit to doing is to participate every day after school for 2.5 hours, so that's Monday through Friday, for approximately 34 weeks during the school year. And we also host a 6-week summer camp where we have the kids all day, so roughly 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, for 6 weeks in the summer. And it's a really, really big commitment. But, you know, we offer every standard orchestral instrument, so harp, percussion, all brass, woodwinds, and strings. And the kids come together and collectively perform about 25 to 30 times per year. In exchange of that, one could look at it as parents receive free after-school daycare. But they get something much more, which all of our families understand. To reach the standards of excellence that we have in our program, the kids have to be dedicated. They have to work hard. They have to work collaboratively in a team. And, you know, they really have to be open to wanting to be part of a community that really stretches them in very demanding ways. There's no entry requirement. So we start kids from scratch. Most of our kids have never touched an instrument. And we take full responsibility for engaging them. If a kid can't play over the break on a clarinet, we write a third clarinet part so that those kids can be successful and then build upon that. Not the same for every single kid. We have some kids that live in very stressful environments. Things like they have to raise their little sibling. They have to get them up in the morning, get them ready for school, maybe grab something to eat, make sure that they both get to school, make sure they both get home, that type of thing. Some neighborhoods that are very, very dangerous, where the kids have firsthand knowledge of people close to them or close to their family that have been hurt, perhaps even murdered. Sometimes them seeing up close everything from domestic abuse to, of course, violence just right on their block. Plus intelligently managing matter that's making tracks fatter. Revolve around, sattering like rings and bring swings. When I stings with bass, then distort up in your face like lace. Busting your dreams like gaps with loaded magazines. I'm on a rap scene, repelling fellas like a vaccine. As I rise from under blundering, I'm not lyrically, you get shot, get caught. So distort with thought for real. We have kids, a good number of kids that grow up in a challenging environment, but in a very supportive household. Where, I would probably say the vast majority of our families are really doing the very best that they can to keep body and soul together for their kids. And then being involved in something like Play on Philly helps them even more. School environment, it's like most schools, kids can be brutal to each other in terms of just bullying. There could be a good amount of competition, as a lot of kids gravitate to sports, where no matter how you slice it, half the kids always have to lose. There's also just the challenges. The kids are probably sitting 25 to 30 in a classroom, so them being seen and heard is another challenge that may not happen a lot. They come in, and usually within the first couple of weeks, they are now best friends with all of the other kids in Play on Philly. They have a club. We replace that competition with a sense of shared struggle as they play in the orchestra. And that really has a bonding effect that is really neat to see over time. I think there's one important thing to understand. There's a lot of correlative evidence in the arts that the arts for young people is inherently good for them. It makes them more confident, it makes them smarter, makes them more collaborative, makes them happier. And unfortunately, all of those things are not true. Again, there's a correlation that kids who are engaged in the arts, and in this case, engaged in music, have these outcomes. Well, what if the kid does a 1 week percussion workshop? Is it still the same? Is that kid having the same level of, or experiencing the same level of impact than a kid who is playing the bassoon for 15 hours per week and jumping through all sorts of hoops to learn the technique of playing in ensembles with other friends, and then of course progressing over the span of many, many years.
Non val medicina, non giova la china, non si può guarire, bisogna morire, bisogna morire, bisogna morire. I Giovanni Putti, gli omini tutti, tutt'anno a finire, bisogna morire, bisogna morire, bisogna morire. I sani, gli infermi, i bravi, gli inerni, tutt'anno a finire, bisogna morire, bisogna morire, bisogna morire.
Theory of change for Play on Philly, quite frankly, it's no different than the theory of change for every single arts program that's out there. We're doing this to be able to benefit kids emotionally, socially, academically, but what makes what we do different is that we can actually explain how.
Bisogna morire, bisogna.
When you have a kid perfect their technique and they go back over and over again to get the right notes out, to be able to hear what a scale sounds like, memorize the notes of their scales, and of course all the technique of holding the bow properly, forming an embouchure, or the grip on mallets, then what ends up happening is that those kids learn how to focus in ways that are completely different than even being in a percussion workshop for 1 week. When you tell a kid to pause and wait, observe the rest, and to be able to build the discipline to make music with others, and of course contribute 100%, that kid learns inhibition. And when you ask a kid to play in the context of a group, you're really stretching their attention. When you then put that kid in a classroom, when now, you know, Camille is asked to come to the board to do the problem after it's been explained, and he didn't pay attention or couldn't pay attention, he's not going to be able to do it. And if he can't do it at the board, how is he going to take home the homework and get that done? And then how is he going to get the quiz done at the end of the week, the test at the end of the month, or the standardized test in the spring?
Thank you.
when you teach those skill sets, that's when you see a change in grades. When you teach inhibition, that's when you see a change in behavior. Because if I bump into you in the hallway, do I have enough control to just say, you know, my bad, and keep walking? Or do I punch you in the face and then stuff you in a locker because you bumped into me? And then same thing with sitting in the context of an orchestra and being able to direct your attention. Not only are you worried about your technique, but you're listening. Are you in tune with your friend? Are you playing in time with your friend? Are you following the conductor's cues? And are you even listening to the balance between your section and what perhaps the violins are doing in the front? It's just a handful of musical symbols. So to make the correlation, oh, playing music makes you better at languages, or playing music makes you learn teamwork just off of doing it. No. There's a very specific way that, and rules and constructs that teams require, just like orchestras require, just like choirs require. And you have to be able to train a kid in that specifically if you want the outcome.
I thought it would be interesting to explore Stanford's approach to developing this program and how he managed to build a solid organization around it. Beyond music education, my guess is that he had to wear different hats, and that, yeah, this speaks to the reality of many artists today. But chapter 2, relationships.
I've been a social entrepreneur since I was a little kid. When I was 8 years old, I started a family newspaper. I convinced people in my church to subscribe every month. In high school, I started the Atlanta Trumpet Festival at Emory University. In college, I started a summer camp in Reading, Pennsylvania, which is about an hour and a half from Philadelphia. And then also in Philadelphia, I created a brass camp for the school district of Philadelphia students. So I had always been dabbling with stuff, trying to build community through music. I mean, one impression that I don't want to give is that we, from the outset, just pulled together money and kids. I mean, first of all, when I was a student at Curtis, I made sure that after the performance, I did not go out the back door, the artist door, and then go to the bar and hang out with my friends. I went out to the lobby and I greeted guests that came in, thanked them for coming out. And also, oftentimes, would collect their business card and write to them, thanking them again for coming out, following up for coffee.
Thank you.
What I didn't know at the time was that I was having coffee with some insanely rich people. I knew they had money, but some of these people, some of our donors have access to money in the billions, and a good number of them well into the millions. Later, when I would call them again several years after, you know, raising the $300,000 to get started was easier to do because there were relationships that I had. I talk with people a lot about is just the importance of building relationships. And it might not be clear how you can use that person at that time, but most of it becomes clearer later on.
And a good illustration of Stanford's craft with relationships and how it pays off is when he met Simon Rattle, a very prominent orchestra conductor. I really like this story.
I made sure that during the break, I went and introduced myself to him. I wrote a letter to follow up and just delivered it to the Philharmonie in Berlin. And when he came back to conduct the Philadelphia Orchestra, made sure that I stayed in touch. And I had no idea as a student that I would ask him 5 years later to conduct a student orchestra that I put together. Not only did he conduct it, he put the kids on the stage of the Kimmel Center. The orchestra canceled their overture, and our kids had the opportunity to play for a sold-out audience. What I also didn't know, there was an insanely rich person sitting in the audience, someone that I had met through my Curtis days, who wrote us $1 million check. I mean, I remember that from my church service in my youth days, from Boy Scouts, from 4-H Club, from the little entrepreneurial ventures. If I was going to convince people in my church to buy a subscription to Thompson newspaper, you know, as an 8 or 9 year old kid, you know, that required relationships because, quite frankly, they didn't care about reading the news. But they cared about seeing me pursue something, and it was cute, and you know, I delivered on time and all of that stuff. And again, at the end of the day, even with Play on Philly, there were people who wanted to see me be successful. They wanted to see our teachers be successful and have impact within our kids, and they wanted to see the kids have the opportunity to play. in the times that we're in now with COVID-19, and people have all these ideas, and now they want people to consume them and to provide them support and click on a GoFundMe campaign, or a Patreon page, or whatever it ends up being, and there's no relationships there, it's just infinitely harder.
Chapter 3, From a 10-Year Cycle to Another.
We now have 9 years of research on our kids. So we can now tell a story that is much, much more powerful than we could a while ago. And I'm glad that for all the time and all the money that we invested in our research, I mean, well over probably $600,000, I'm glad that we invested that time and money so that we can tell a different story. We will finish our 10th year at the end of this summer. I feel really, really proud of what we have accomplished. And there were lots of ups and downs, but I had already been on a roller coaster called playing the trumpet for, you know, 15 years before I even started playing on Philly. And I could rely on those skills and those, you know, the tough lessons that I learned. And this is why I'm so convinced that every kid should go through a 10-year cycle where they are deeply immersed in the arts and learning and experiencing all the ups and downs, all the joys that it brings, all the frustration as well. And I think that if more kids experience that, it's like, geez, what would this world be?
We then started talking about the crazy times we're going through right now and how this keeps affecting always the same communities, and how music as a social service fits into this reality.
I think a lot of the problems that have been highlighted through this COVID-19 crisis, they've always been there. Pay has always been low throughout Philadelphia, which impacts the majority of our families. And these are families that should have, and workers that should have received a raise a long time ago. And it's interesting to see now how thankful we are for people who work in grocery stores or people who deliver food. Truck drivers. I mean, the list goes on and on. Now, you know, everybody wants to give them a tip and is okay with paying higher prices for goods so that they can be paid better. I hope things like that stick. I am hurting inside and grieving inside because this crisis has now just ripped the Band-Aid off. It has shown a light on, you know, everything. For the organization, it's challenging. First of all, programmatically, because you know everything that I described in terms of our impact, we're not able to fully deliver on in a virtual environment. We can still do a lot of musical literacy. We can still keep the kids connected and continue to build a sense of community virtually. And we're doing our very best, you know, with all of that. But we do miss the ability to have the full impact during this time, but we're very hopeful that we will be together again, that we will survive this. And I think it's going to be magical when the kids are in the room again, safely being able to make music with one another. We realize that we're in a marathon, to outrun the health crisis. We have to outrun the financial crisis. So we've done everything that we can to reduce our expenses to only what is necessary. We have quickly rethought what engagement looks like, understanding that we can't deliver an equitable program by having kids continue to play their instruments all the time. Not all of them were able to take them home. Trying to maintain hundreds of instruments spread across the city is very difficult to do. Sense of community, that sense of connection is certainly one of the best things that we can do during this time to keep our kids moving forward, to keep our donors inspired to give, that they see that we're adapting. And what I'm really interested to find out is just how will we begin innovating in this virtual space? How else might we innovate in a time of crisis? And really go a step beyond just adapting to our situation, because I believe it will be the innovative reiteration of Play on Philly that will inspire our next major gifts. There are a lot of very, very noble efforts all over the world. Many that are inspired by Alpha Sema, many that are inspired by what we kind of coined here, or at least in the U.S., as kind of the creative youth development space. You know, I would probably go as far as saying that the majority of musicians and really artists are giving back. They are teaching. And that is very, very great. You know, what I hope that can happen is that more of our major institutions can step in and partner with artists in new ways to help amplify their work, to help sustain the work that's happening throughout the community. And overall, like, I wish the sector of the arts would do more. Building programs that just work with a bunch of kids. I understand how that was important 20 or 30 years ago. Doing children's concerts, for example, that is great. But not responding when music and the arts has been removed from a lot of schools, or not responding quick enough and not responding boldly enough, that part, in my opinion, is inexcusable. Because in a time like this, the health crisis is important. Access to just basic amount of money, being able to keep their homes. I mean, those are really big issues. I think it's hard in this climate to make the case of how important the arts are. Not to say that we don't add value in a crisis like this, but making that point is even harder these days. So how are we working in our communities so that when we get to the other end of this, we aren't that afterthought, and that we can build from there? Most of me feels like the communication between artists to decision makers is really bad. And I also think the communication between a community and its artists is also really bad. And what would this look like if communication were better? If we listened to our communities more? Because would that inspire us to stop playing Beethoven symphonies? And would that start to inspire us to commission works from people in the community that would better reflect what that community is actually going through, or what that community wants to say artistically? And then, you know, same thing between the artists and the decision makers. If communication were better between us, we would not be in a situation where now funders are saying, "We just want to get you some money and help you. No strings attached, no reporting. You apply the money where it's going to be best." Instead of, "We want to support these three areas." So it could be hunger relief, the arts, and education. "And we want proposals that are no more than $25,000 of a request. And we want to hear about what new projects or what new corner you want to turn." And all of that money given in this crisis, almost everybody eased the restrictions on their money. It's not that we necessarily need to be at the table and be, you know, with the decision makers on how the money goes, but if they would just listen, if we would, you know, all of that, then we wouldn't have to be at the table to be a decision maker. So and I hope that in the coming decade, that more of our major institutions can do more and not feel like they have to do it by themselves. They can do it in partnership with the artists, the musicians that they already have, those that are living locally, and create a powerful program. I am one kid. I started this when I was 23. We have raised about $16 or $17 million since then, We hire over 30 teachers. We have 300 kids. This is just one kid. And we probably do that with the support of around 600 donors a year. Philadelphia is a region of 3 million. I also believe that doing more work on a much deeper level in our communities could also help many of even the major legacy arts organizations find more avenues for sustainability.
I think everything is said. Thank you very much, Stanford, for your participation, for making your points so precise and articulate, which we can easily expect from a professional musician and an educator, I have to say. What I think is very valuable in the story of Play on Philly is the knowledge they have accumulated on how to build and sustain such programs, how kids learn, grow, and deal with the difficulties they have to deal with all across the spectrum. It's very inspiring. I think we can all agree these kinds of programs should be accessible in every single community on the planet in different shapes and forms. There's a lot going on already, but as always, we humans can do better, a lot better. Thank you to the Cosmic team for the cosmic work. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you, you. Yes, you. I'm wondering, are you wearing different hats? Are you building meaningful, long-lasting relationships? What's your 10-year cycle? Let me know. Write me an email. Let's get in touch and make something happen. hello@cosmic.show. I'll speak to you next week. Ciao. Thank you.